Blog Talk Radio
presents a Blog Radio Show.
Everybody, welcome to Applause Radio Show. I'm Joanne Barton, and I am excited. I've got one of the people who made Man TV. Without her, I don't know if it would have been as big as it was. We've got actress comedian with us tonight, Deborah Wilson. I can't wait to talk to her. Before we get started, I want to get right into it. Let me just say thanks to a few of our sponsors: the High Bar and Bistro in Garfield, New Jersey; KWV Wines in South Africa; the Observer newspaper in Kearney, New Jersey; and H21 hand sanitizer. We'll get to the rest later. Ms. Deborah Wilson, welcome to Applause Radio Show, and thank you so much for joining me. How are you?
My pleasure and my blessing, Joanne Barton, ladies and gentlemen. It is a pleasure and an honor and a blessing to be here tonight. Thank you so much for having me on the show.
Oh, no, thank you. I can't thank you enough. I mean, I just couldn't
believe it.
That,
thank you.
No, thank you. You know, I
no,
got to
no, no.
know.
Well, then thank you for thanking my thank you when I thank you.
I got to know. I don't know if people know, but, like, you were one of the longest cast members on Mad TV. And are they going to do...
I was the longest lasting original cast member,
right,
from pilot to eighth season. But Michael McDonald did 14 seasons, but he came in the third season. So he wasn't an original. He came in fourth season. So he wasn't an original, but he came in fourth season. And then he did 10 seasons and I did 8. But I'm the longest running original cast member on the show. And Michael is the longest running cast member on the show.
Wow. And have you guys ever talked about getting together to do a reunion sketch show, or have you guys done that?
That's been done. That's been done years ago. Darling, that one was done and dusted. That was going
I didn't see it. I missed it. I'm upset I missed it. I'll have to look for it online.
Well, you can
but
find
it's
it.
You guys. It was the original cast. It was the original cast.
No, it wasn't the original cast, but it had some members from the original cast. And you can find that online at the CWSeed.com. That's CWSeed.com. And you can also find when the show was rebooted with new cast members, like the completely brand new Mad TV with new cast members, and they were all absolutely brilliant. Unfortunately, the show didn't go, but a lot of them went on to continue to work in other venues, comedy-wise and voiceover-wise and acting-wise and movie-wise and television-wise. So, it was a great run. It started as an anniversary show, and then people assumed that we would all come back together. And it was really an introduction to the reboot. And
right.
A lot of us went on to the new show, onto the newer revamped 4.0 Mad TV in order to get their appearances and host that kind of a thing. So I know I went back. I know Nicole Sullivan went back. Not all original cast members went back, but definitely there were a number of people that came back and did the show, for sure.
Wow. Now, a lot of the cast went on to bigger and better things, including yourself. I mean, do you guys ever have you ever worked, or any of you guys ever intermingled in each other's projects that they're working on now or that you've worked on?
Oh, yeah, Michael McDonald is also very well renowned as a director. So he wasn't just acting. Michael writes. Michael, oh my goodness, he does a lot of the films. I can't think of the director's name offhand. He's a comedy director, and he's really, really amazing. And he does a lot of films with Melissa McCarthy. Whenever there's a Melissa McCarthy film, comedy, Michael McDonald, yeah, 9 times out of 10 is in it.
Didn't know that. Yeah, I never realized it.
Yeah, and he also directs. He did. He directed a series that didn't last long with Anne Heche.
Mm.
He brought me in as a guest star. And Michael not only directed, but he also guest starred. So it was lovely to work with him and be directed by him.
Right, right. Well, you and Nicole were just fabulous together when you guys did Lita and Melina. I mean, I have to ask you, too, you're originally from Queens. So did you get these characters, Lita and Beneatha, from being around growing up? Or, I mean, did you create these characters? Or who came up with the characters?
Beneatha Latifah Halifa Trefa Jackson came from an improv that I did in New York. Mm. I was working with an all-woman improv and sketch team, and we did live shows in Manhattan. And someone in the audience asked my name because it was an improv, and we got our suggestions. And at one point, someone, you know, wanted to know the name. So, they, you know, we gave the audience, once we set it up, we gave the audience permission to ask questions of these people. And someone asked me what my name was, and straight out, I just said, Beneatha Latifah Halifa Trefa Jackson. Straight out, just came out of it. And so when it came to Meg, I really hadn't considered bringing her to the table. And when I did bring her to the table, the writers had a different slant for her. Hair and makeup had a different slant for her. And then at that point, when she went from New York Improv to Mad TV in California, she became very ghetto fabulous and almost bipolar, where she loves you 1 minute and can't stand you the next. And and has an
attitude. Because I'm black? Because I'm black?
Mm-hmm. Not black. Not black. Black. B-U-L-A.
Black.
Because I'm black. What? So, you know, and then very racially motivated at times.
But it was just good. It was great.
Yeah, and that's how she developed. So she continued to develop from, like, the second season, but didn't, kind of floundered. And then there were writers that came in by the fourth season and hit the ground running with honing in on this character and helping me develop this character even more by taking her into a direction that we call ghetto fabulous.
Mm. Well, I'm guessing that when you were doing Beneatha and when you were doing the Lita and Melina, that you guys really threw a lot of improv in there. I'm not even thinking you had a script when you did that, because it just, the way that the two of you, especially you and Nicole, were carrying on, there's no way there was a script.
Well, it was always scripted. It was always scripted, but I'll tell you how we came up with it, because we weren't thinking about it. Nicole and I, we were just talking about our weekends, telling me that she saw a Latina young lady, and when they walk up to her, it's always vague. It's like, oh, can you do that thing where you were, like, in that skit, and you said those words, and, like, I started really laughing hard, but you were in a car, and it's never, like, it's, like, vague. You're like, what? And then that happened to me, and I was like, oh, my God, Nicole, that happened to me. In fact, this girl dressed like that character. She had on chinos and a cotton tank top, which they used to call wife beaters.
Yeah, yeah.
And I told her about this character, and she had no idea about the show or this character. She was a teenage girl in high school, and she had hair pulled up in a scrunchie. She had absolutely no idea about this character on Mad TV. None.
No, she's
and
stupid.
So Nicole and I were talking about it in the hallways of the production office. And one of the writers overheard us and went, oh, my God, I have to write these characters. Can you come in and describe it? And we did. And the more we did, the more she wrote. And that was the fabulous who went from a writer to a head writer to one of the executive producers, the late Lauren Dombrowski, who made her transition a while ago from cancer. So God bless her, and I love her. And but she really, she's responsible for taking Lita and Melina to the pinnacle of what we did on the show.
Oh, it was great. It was great. It was great. It says, it's so stupid. This is so stupid. Mm. Nina,
yeah.
Nina.
and always calling out. And it was also Lauren Dombrowski, who wrote on, you know, like the character of Rosa, like Rosa the dead bitch.
Oh, Rosa that whore.
No, we never called her that. We would never use that. Because I think that's a little too degrading, and I think that goes over the edge.
She was a slut,
of what
slut.
It would be, and to me it goes from funny to, you know, inconsiderate. We always call her a dead bish, B-I-S-H. She a dead bish.
That's right, that's right. Oh, yeah,
Rosa,
yeah.
That
Rosa.
Bish. She a dead bish.
Oh, my God, too funny. Oh, I miss that show so much, and I really do. And, when you did your Whitney, too, when you were, Bobby!
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun. In fact, I do a lot of Whitney and Oprah and other characters. I reprise those when I'm on Cameo. I'm not on social media, but a friend of someone convinced me and said, look, have you ever done Cameo? And I said, well, I have no idea what that is. And they said, look, it's an app, and you do special greetings for people as your characters, as yourself. And you can do birthday greetings and messages and, you know, all sorts of anniversaries and holidays and special occasions. And so you basically go to Cameo and you run through their list of movie actors, television actors, from social media people who are influencers. And there are a ton of people on there who will do a personal greeting for you, for a friend, for a family member, and surprise them. And so Cameo is best known for showing videos of people being surprised by the cameos they get on their own.
Yeah.
And believe it or not, Wesley Snipes does it. There's
a lot of people do it.
Well-known actors who do that.
Yeah, a lot of people do it. You know, because people really want to be in touch with their favorite celebrities, and they feel special when you speak to them. So, you know, it's great. So, how long you been doing it?
Well, you're not really speaking to them. You're not really speaking to them on Cameo. What it is someone gets a Cameo for you. You can give one to yourself, but essentially with Cameo, you're asking them to wish something very personal as opposed to a conversation because you can't speak. Mm. It's a video that they make saying, hey, happy birthday. I hear it's your birthday. Hey, everybody, it's Wesley Snipes here. Or, hey, Michelle, it's your birthday. Or, hi, Joanne, it's your sister love, Deborah Wilson from Man TV. I hear you're having an anniversary coming up. So, it's all these personal messages, personal messages. So the person either getting the cameo gives them all this personal information so that they can use that information so that that celebrity or that person giving the cameo can use all that information in it. And so when I do them, a lot of times people ask for the impersonations or the impressions, or they're nostalgic about Mad TV. So it's nothing for me to be able to pull out any of those characters and do an improv. Sometimes I've improv to the point where now normally on Cameo, the website and the app, with Cameo, you average 30 seconds to a minute. They feel like 30 seconds to a minute, you can say happy birthday. Debbie Gibson is on it, okay?
Right.
So, and she plays piano beautifully and still sings amazingly.
So yeah.
If they ask you to average about 30 seconds to a minute, maybe a minute and a half. My average is about 20 minutes.
And it's not expensive. And it's not expensive either, right? I mean, people could, it's affordable.
Well, it depends. Here's the thing. Any person who's on Cameo can make their own rate. Like a Wesley Snipes, he's going to ask for $1,000.
Wow.
Or, you know, anywhere from $500 to $1,000. But he deserves it because you're getting a personal message from Wesley Snipes. And when you go on the site, you can actually look at some of the messages that Wesley Snipes has sent out if it's not marked private. And he's hilarious. Wesley Snipes is not only a brilliant actor, but he's also extremely funny. And he's just brilliant. And if you don't believe me, watch him in the Netflix film, My Name is Dolomite. He steals everything. Wesley Snipes is just absolutely a consummate. You know, people think of him action. They think of Blade. You know, and you know, white men can't jump. But when it comes to what he does now, and like I said, I haven't seen Coming to America 2, in which he's in, but I did see him in My Name is Dolomite, and that Eddie Murphy asked him to do it. Wesley Snipes said yes, coming to America, I'm sure. Well, I'd like to believe that Eddie Murphy said, please come and play with us again. And he did. And he's just always brilliant in everything he does. He just really
well,
is. So
it's funny you say that.
Anybody out there that's never seen Wesley Snipes be extremely funny, watch the Netflix film, My Name is Dolomite.
I got to write it down.
Starring Eddie
Murphy. My name is Dolomite. Yeah, I was going to mention, I recently just saw Coming to America, and I was actually surprised at Wesley Snipes' performance. Because, like he said, most people imagine him as action star, and he had a great comedy, and he sang, he danced, and everything. I was very impressed. I was like, wow, I couldn't believe it. I was like, I didn't know he did that type of acting. I thought he was just, like you said, an action star. So I got to check out this My Name is Dolomite now. So, but
please.
I will. So now let's say you're in Queens. You're a young girl. What makes you say, I want to be a comedian or an actress? I mean, what was the thing for you what was the turning point that said, I want to be serious and do this?
I never was serious about it. I never got serious until I moved to California. It was one of those things that was fun because I still had a city job and I loved my city job and it was stable. So for me, I can dabble in that area and then jump back onto my foundation. That other thing wasn't going to crumble on me. And if it did, I can springboard back onto my foundation because I never gave up my city job. I did a series with Joan Rivers and still had a city job.
Wow.
What did you do?
Oh, Can We Shop
series.
Or something? What was it? Can We Shop?
That's
or?
What we did.
Yeah.
Yep. I not only sold products on the show, but I was their audience warm-up and her announcer.
I was cool.
I can do this. So the producers were like, go ahead. And what I would do is she would have an audience of like 100 people, and I would memorize every single person's name in the audience. And then when Joan came out, I would introduce them one by one.
Wow. And what is that? How'd you get that memory? What is that? What do you call that?
You know what you do, and I don't have a mnemonic memory. I don't have a mnemonic memory. And I can't think, she used to be on Taxi, so pardon my name, pardon.
Mary Lou
Henner.
Yeah.
Yes, she has mnemonic memory. I don't. I couldn't even remember her damn name just now, okay? So for the show, I would talk to people as the warm-up. So instead of just coming out and doing comedy and doing a routine or improvising, I would talk to the audience and engage them. And each time they mentioned something, I would get their name and where they live and what they're from, and this way you build up their personality so you don't forget their name.
Mm.
And then when they talk to you again, you say their name out loud. Oh, what were you saying, John? What did you say,
Bob? Right.
What did you say, Bob? What did you say, Michelle? What did you say, Lily? So I would say their names again, so by the time Joan Rivers came out, and I would also associate them with a particular color of shirt that they had on.
Mm.
So if their flat, yes. if their shirt were yellow and their name was Lily, I would associate yellow and lily as in just a color of a flower, and her name is a flower. And I would not confuse it with Daisy, because I would not go, you know, yellow and Daisy. I would go, no, yellow and flower.
I'm good with numbers. I remember numbers, but other than that, I mean, I just feel like I have too much in my head. I just too much to remember everything anymore, you know, and getting up there in the numbers. On the age, so
that's what smartphones are for.
Yeah. Yep.
Store it all somewhere on the cloud.
Yeah.
You know,
so now you're in Queens, and the Apollo's there or close by in Harlem. So I mean, that was just like an opportune, and just living in New York, everything was just there for you. So I mean, I didn't want to do all of that.
I mean, I was reluctant. So this wasn't like this thing where I was like, oh, wow, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to try my hand. I wasn't interested in that. It wasn't my desire. It was a happenstance. It really was a happenstance. Even though I was young at the age of 5 and was like, I'm going to be an actor. I'm an actress. I mean, I was doing an English accent by the time I was 5, 6 years old. And I had this very imaginative mind that never stopped. I remember I got in trouble a lot for that. As a kid, you know, I would go into, you know, I'd be with my parents in a store and I would wander away and talk to people and tell them that these people adopted me and I'm from England and my parents died in a car accident. Bogus stuff like that, because it was just fascinating to watch their reaction. So for me, it was the more I say, the more I focus on your reaction. And because I focus on your reaction, you're giving me permission to continue. Like
right.
If you were dismissive, then obviously that's the end of that. But nobody is ever dismissive to a precocious child.
Mm.
No one is ever dismissive.
Are you in Son of Dolomite? Does that have anything to do with my name is Dolomite?
Was another Dolomite, you know, was Rudy Ray Moore, the comedian Rudy Ray Moore.
Yeah.
So Dolomite is an actual person. It was Rudy Ray Moore. And My Name is Dolomite is based on his life. It's kind of autobiographical. A little bit of fiction, but mostly reality. And that's what
And what
that
about
Netflix
Son of Dolomite?
Son of, no, I had no association with that. But I did do an animated series called Dolomite. I did do an animated series for quite a while. I'm sorry, not Dolomite, called Black Dynamite.
Oh, okay, okay. Now, I was going to ask you how you wound up doing voiceovers. Is that how you started doing voiceovers, or did someone approach you, or you just saw something and answered, or your agent set you up? I mean, how did you start doing the voiceovers?
You know, that wasn't a new thing. Voiceovers is a part of the industry anyway. So when you think of Mad TV and all of those Spit Shack commercials, I sang the jingle. Whenever there was music on the show, if I was playing Beyonce or if I was playing Mariah Carey or Whitney Houston, I did all my own vocals. So whenever there were jingles for the Spit Shack commercials, I sang them in three-part harmony. Or whenever there were music videos, you know, I did the music.
It's just so funny. You are so multi-talented and never even had the desire to be in the industry. And look what happened. Isn't that crazy?
It's not crazy. It's very sane. And the reason it's sane is, you know, no matter what you do, when you're following a path, you can be reluctant about that path, but you're still on it anyway.
Right. And I guess it wasn't so stressful either. Like, it wasn't a make or break thing for you. So it wasn't, it didn't drive you crazy to a degree, you know?
No, because it was about having a good time. So when I learned improv, they plucked me from an audience. And I was, they wanted an audience volunteer. And I'd already gone to the High School of Performing Arts. So for me, it was like, all right, a new form of what are you guys doing? Tell me about improv acting, okay? I know how to act already. I've been acting my whole life. So tell me about this. And then once I knew what improv was, and basically it's two rules, yield and don't deny, it was like, well, I can be in this moment. But it wasn't for me to show off. It wasn't for me to get a job. It wasn't for me to be a star. It wasn't for me to get attention or focus. This was now just fun after work. Because I knew the next day I was going back to work. So this was just fun. And that's how I started with improv. And then from that improv group, I went into other improv groups and learned how to write sketch comedy. And from there, I did a pilot. And then from there, I did a series. And from there, I did commercials, and then from there, I did my first film. From there, I did work with Joan Rivers, and so it was those things with like, okay, that's steamrolling, but I still have a city job, so I'm grounded. So I never saw the entertainment industry as something that was grounded for me, but by the time Mad TV came along, it was just an audition process, so I never assumed that I would get it. It wasn't like one of those things that was like, oh, God, I really want to be on TV. Oh, God, I really want this. It was like, no, I was already working on a Spike Lee film when that happened.
Wow.
So I took a break from, I had a weekend and got permission from the producers and Spike Lee himself to go into Los Angeles and do my audition, my final callback in front of the network, and then get on a plane the next day and get back because I had to be on set in the next 2 days. So for me, I was already working and had my city job. So I can do Spike Lee movies and the role was small enough. It's not going to interfere with my city job, and I booked it, and I auditioned for it, and Spike Lee hired me. Great. So all of those things were the simple dynamics. It's like a job. So you do this to get this, and you do this. So I was thinking on those simple dynamics, but I wasn't thinking of, oh, I'm going to be a star. I'm going to be rich. Where does this go from here? So I had no expectation. I had no expectation because I knew that there were so many people out there with pictures, with resumes, who are going to school, who are studying, who really are going to make their craft their living. And I was already making a living. And I was making a great living, and it was a stable living because I worked for the city. And so by the time Mad TV rolled around and I auditioned for it, I was like, great. I get to go to Los Angeles for a month to do this, and then I'll come back because it'll fail. So I'm used to having things be short-lived, you know, be very short-lived. I auditioned for In Living Color, and they flew me out to Los Angeles. And after that audition, I came back to work. So for me, everything was short-lived, and that was my conditioning. You know, my home is New York. This is my job. All this other stuff in the fantasy realm is tangible, but then it's supposed to go away. So in my mind, it's supposed to go away. And when Mad TV didn't go away, I was very disappointed. I didn't want to do it. I was very disappointed at first. But by then, contracts were signed and negotiated, and I was signed to a 5-year contract.
And did they hold your city job for you? How long did they hold the city job for you?
They're not going to hold a city job. You know what I'm saying? When it's time to go, it's time to go.
Yeah.
You know, you have to face the inevitable music as opposed to feeling like, well, I'm going to come back to this. You know. And my sister said it. We were crying in the street before I left. I said, I'll be back. Because, again, I'm used to things failing. I'm used to things ending and then coming back. And she was like, no, you're not coming back. I feel it. I feel it. You're gone for good. You're gone. And that was 27 years ago.
Wow. Well, you are just amazing. I mean, you sing, you dance, you write. I was going to ask you if you have ever written anything.
Well, I don't know about the dancing
and...
part. Ain't all
well,
of us
I've
dance.
Seen you move.
I can move. I can move. Yeah, I will. You know what? I will accept that. Oh, I can move.
You can move. That's for sure. What was your audition for Mad TV? Do you remember what you did?
Oh, absolutely. It was a lot.
What'd you do?
A lot going on. I had to do improv. I had to come up with, because the basis of the show is you did improv, but more than anything else, the basis of the show was based on Mad Magazine, which means you had to have characters and you had to have impersonations or impressions.
Right.
And so I did what I knew. I did Whoopi Goldberg. Mm. I did a couple of people, Rosie Perez.
Mm.
And so, you know, my audition process was basically doing that. And,
and I
came from improv at that point. So it was like I can improv all day long, which is why my cameos average anywhere from 15 to 20 minutes sometimes. and then that was with the casting director. And then that was the executive producers came to New York to see if I was legit. And then it was off to Los Angeles. And then it was it. So I had 3 auditions in New York and my final one in L.A. Before I even left, they said, you know what? We're not supposed to say anything because this is supposed to go through legal and it's supposed to go through your representation. But we're just so excited. They loved you. You're in. And I was the first one hired on the show. I was the first one hired.
Right. And the first woman of color, too, to be on the show that long, too, right?
Yeah. So they changed.
Amazing.
I was there for 8 years. And for those 8 years, they changed different black male cast members, white male cast members, and white female cast members. But I was the only black woman. They never brought in another black woman to play against, never, or to play with, never.
Well, who can top you? Nobody can top you.
I'll tell you, Ken. She's a whirlwind. She sings, she dances, she acts, and she's absolutely amazing. She came from the Groundlings in Los Angeles. Her name is Danielle Gaither, and they brought her on. And she is absolutely brilliant. I know her personally. I know her from the work she's done live at Groundlings. And I've worked with her doing improv shows at Groundlings. And she's absolutely a triple threat and an amazing human being.
Wow. Well, so are you.
She came in and kicked ass.
Well, that's coming from you. She definitely had to be because, I mean, I just can't see anybody topping you. I really can't. So for you to say that,
Danielle
then she must
Gaither
have been really good.
Yes. Danielle Gaither.
Yeah, I got to ask you about your love for, should I say, exotic pets. I mean, you had two boa constrictors and scorpions, no? Is that correct?
Yeah, my boas have passed on. That was a long time ago. But right now I have got, what do I have? I have 8 species of tarantula,
oh my goodness.
I have 14 scorpions. And
oh
actually, it's going to be more than 14 because one of my scorpions, where scorpions was gravid. Gravid means pregnant. One of my scorpions was gravid, and she gave birth to anywhere from 15 to 20 scorpions. We call them, instead of scorpions because they're babies, they're little ones, we call them scorpions. Yeah. So she gave birth to like 15 to 20 scorpions.
You ever been stung or bit by anything?
Nope. I know how to handle them, and I'm gentle with them, and I don't do it to stress them out. I don't pick them up just to pick them up. It's not a novel thing for me. I pick them up when I need to take them out of their enclosure in order to clean the enclosure, in order to change their water and get them fresh water. So, yeah, but I've got loads of pictures on my phones of my babies, and I also have a dog, and I also have two aquariums. So I'm surrounded.
No, I'm just wondering, you know, you couldn't have these pets in Queens, so when did your love for these exotic animals happen? I mean, you know.
Well, I had my snake. I had Victor Boa Constrictor in New York. I traveled with him and two cats. Yeah, his full name is Victor Boa Constrictor. Once you get hugged by a boa, you won't get hugged any moa, Wilson. That was his full name.
Great.
And I had that in New York.
So I
had Victor in New York from a baby. I brought him with me out here along with two cats.
Oh, my God.
I had two cats at the time, too.
My
fascination of snakes came from fear. My love and then my fascination of tarantulas came from fear. My love and my fascination with scorpions came from fear.
I guess owning them, you're not afraid of them anymore. That's for sure, right? Owning them, you're not afraid of them anymore.
Well, I'm fascinated with how fabulous these creatures are, that God can create these amazing creatures. And the more I learn about them, how fierce they are, but, you know, how fascinating they are, their life cycle and their mating rituals and everything about scorpions, it just fascinated me. And the first time I held one, it was like I held a scorpion. It was one of the biggest fears and abject terrors of my life. And I couldn't get over the fact that I held one. And so I really wanted to get one because I had held one. And it was, like I said, that wiped away, canceled out every sense of terror and fear. Same thing with a tarantula. Someone put one on me, and this was recently. So I'm talking about 3 to 4 years ago. Scorpions are almost like 15 years ago, but tarantulas are like 3 to 4 years ago. And someone put one on me, and I went away going, oh, my God, I held a scorpion. I mean, I held a tarantula.
Yeah.
And it fell off my hand. Usually they won't go beyond your hand, but sometimes if they're nervous, they'll jump and not realizing that they're going to jump and hurt themselves. And their abdomens are delicate. They can even burst, and it could kill them. So my first thought was, I got to scoop you up because I got to care for you. I don't want to hurt you. But I didn't have any fear. It wasn't like I got scared, and then when somebody else picked that up, it's too creepy for me. I immediately was concerned for its well-being.
Yeah.
And that's what stuck. You know, it's like a shock to the system. It's like that thing that got stuck with me is caring for its well-being, hence me becoming fascinated with caring for their well-being, and I have 8 different species.
Wow. Wow. I'm strictly dog cat, and I'll stick to dog.
I'll stick to dog.
Aww.
Right, Lucy?
Oh. Well, I got to say, too, you look absolutely amazing. You look beautiful, and I you are a walking tattoo parlor. When did you get into the tattoos?
You know what? I've always been fascinated with tattoos because it was always a sense of taboo. But I was fascinated that you can have a picture on your body that's permanent and that it's in your skin. And I love the idea of the permanency of putting a picture and telling a story. So,
what's your favorite one?
Kid growing up with storybooks.
Yeah, what's your favorite tattoo that you have?
I don't have a favorite one. They're all brilliant and amazing. There are some that I look at more than others, but I wouldn't necessarily call them favorites. But they're because I love looking at my body art because I'm completely covered now, up to my chin, and so I love my body art. I love my body art because they're all together, you know, are taking away from that negative space in between with all of these amazing pieces, spiritual pieces, you know. Things that I wanted to put on my body to tell my story and live my life out loud as colorfully as I can and take ownership of that. So all of it together is a conglomerate of telling that story. So I wouldn't put one piece over the other because that, in my mind, cancels out the others. And I can't see myself, you know, with all that negative space looking at just my my piece that I love the most. So all of it is beautiful. All of it is amazing. And it's all in different places that are perfect for where they need to be. So
yeah.
If I'm looking at my back, I'm loving my back. If I'm looking at my chest, I'm loving my chest because everything is covered, including, you know, my breasts, everything.
Wow.
Tops of my feet. The only thing that's not covered are the tops of my hands.
Yeah, well,
that's
next. That's
the
next because that's the only space you have left. That's the only space you have left.
Only behind my ears. And then, of course, my neck is completely tattooed up to my chin.
I only ever wanted one tattoo in my life, and I wanted it under my big toe, the word "ouch" with an exclamation point. That's all I ever wanted. I never got one. I'm afraid that it's going to hurt, so I'm not one for pain.
Well,
so
hurt.
You know,
but you
if I can avoid pain, I'm going to do it. So now,
well,
speaking
my
of,
thing is this. That's,
go ahead,
tattoos,
go ahead.
Are a very personal expression. It's not for everybody. And
right.
Not everybody has an addictive personality for it. Some people are like, you know what, I got one and I'm done. Or I've got a couple and I'm not interested in any more because I'm really not, you know, covering my body like that. Because you can never get it off. Once it's there, it's there.
Right.
And so for me, I have an addictive personality. And so once it started, all I could see is the negative space of what an artist could do. So I just went for it, and I never thought of getting a full bodysuit. I was just like, no, I just want a piece here. No, I'm not going to sleeve. I just want a piece here. No, I'm not going to cover that whole area. I just want a piece here. But all I could see was what might you add on to it that would make it fabulous and fantastic.
Mm.
And so I've had amazing artists who I consider family, you know, brothers of mine, brothers in arms when it comes to tattooing and inking, that who brought me into their fold, and I brought them into my fold, and I'm still adding on pieces with negative space, you know, because my whole body's covered. But there's negative space enough to go, let's fill this in.
Mm.
So I've got some appointments coming up. Mama not done. Mama will be done. I think the next 1 to 2 appointments, because I really have all that negative space that I want to cover up, it's being covered up. And I aesthetically don't want to go overboard and look at it and go like, okay, now I went too far. But so
right.
far, going too far has not been too far, but I also don't want to push it. And each
right.
time I've been very, very clear, given it a great deal of thought. There was never a tattoo that I went to and went, oh, I regret this, or, oh, why did I do this?
Right.
Not at all. So, you know, and there are things that I want to change, but I'd never regret them. And so
there are
two more spaces that I would like to fill up, and I trust this new tattoo artist. He's amazing, out of Long Beach, California. And so all I do is get excited because I envision what it is and what it looks like, and every time it's done, Joanne, it's exactly what I thought it would look like and exactly how it would make me feel. So I don't want to push it any further, but I got two more at least.
Have you designed your own? Do you design your own as well?
Well, I don't really design it, but I'll either have dreams or visions, or I'll do the research in what spiritually themed piece that I want, because most of my stuff is themed. And so, and for the rest, it's like cover that up and add that in and fill that in and add that color and decorate that. But for the most part, the larger pats on my body are spiritually themed, you know, from various cultures. I've got everything from Celtic stuff to African stuff to South American stuff to East Indian stuff to you name it. I've got to Hebrew, pagan, you name it. I've got something symbolic on my body that represents many, many cultures of people getting their body sacredly marked and belonging to the community.
Does it still hurt or no? It's just normal now when you get them done.
Oh, no, it hurts. It's always going to hurt. You know why? Because you have no control over your senses. It always hurts. And
the
some places hurt more than others because of the nerve ending. It always hurts.
Ugh,
I can do it.
Well, now forget it. I'm not even going to get ouch now.
No, no. And you know what? They wouldn't put it under the bottom of your toe because it would never last. It would slough off and it'd be gone in 2 weeks.
Oh,
and you'd be like,
wow.
Why did I spend that money? It's gone. And just like, listen. So, but it always hurts and it depends on where you want it. But my thing is this. I would rather deal with the pain because I know that won't end, but what I'll get will last longer. And so I'm always willing to do that because my endorphins also kick in because I'm excited about what it's going to look like when it's done.
Right.
And so.
Right.
It hurts. It hurts. I've gone into a shock a couple of times, and I'm like, keep going. Let's do this.
Keep
Get
going.
Some water. Let me down some water. My body, well, I haven't gone into shock, but my body has gone into shock. And so I was like, okay, well, I did have a meal before I left. Let me just drink some water and let's get back into it. So because once I have my, I'm stubborn. Once my mind is made up that I'm going to get something, I'm going to get it.
Well, you mentioned earlier, you touched on the spirituality. You are very spiritual, and you do spiritual counseling and life coaching. No? I mean, tell us about that.
No, I don't. I don't do spiritual counseling and life coaching. But if anyone else has said that, it's because that's the way they feel about an experience I've had with them. And so I will accept their experience. But there are times when I've been in situations with people I've known, people I haven't known, and stuff like that comes up, and they've given me permission by their conversation that they started with me, and then I move in there. But there have been times when God has spoken to me directly to deliver messages. There have been times when I've been given spiritual messages, and I know each time I am used by God to raise their vibration by supporting them so that God can go in and do the healing. So for me, it's almost like a surgery to a certain extent. I'm not a healer and I'm not a doctor, but I would never take on those terms because doctors to me are practitioners and not healers. I think that God for me is the healer, and people create a practice because if that body is meant to live, it will live. And if that body is not meant to live, it will die. So we don't have control over that. So my ego doesn't need a term of an occupation. So I never call myself a practitioner of anything. But what I like to do is, I like to share wisdom and love, and I like to use my life as an example, all the darkness in my life as an example and a fodder for growth and understanding so that when I see somebody else, I can walk in their shoes. I can say I've been there. So everything that I've ever gone through in my life that has been negative, that has been a dark night of the soul, is a gift. Mama. And because it's been a gift, I get a chance to pull it out of the cupboards and take it out of my pockets and share with someone who feels like they're going through something, but they can't talk about it with anyone. And then when I come and I offer that thing to them, they have an opportunity to go, I thought I was in this alone. Thank you for letting me know that I'm not. And now I'm beginning to find my hope again.
Wow. You're amazing. You're amazing. My goodness.
Well, how sweet of you to see yourself in me.
You are. You're amazing. I'll say it again
because you heard me, but you weren't listening, Joanne. I'll say it again because you heard me, but you weren't listening. I said, how sweet of you to see yourself in me.
Well, I wouldn't go that far. That's what I heard you,
That's
but I don't know if
limit
I...
limit your idea of what you are. Here we go. I'm going to have to do it with you now. That's because you
All right,
your
go
idea
ahead, hit me.
Are.
Go ahead, hit me.
So it's almost
go
like
ahead.
Saying, you know what, I can see amazing, but I can't be amazing. But you can't recognize amazing unless you are that. Mm. You just don't want to give yourself permission. The ego says no because you're bragging. No. Because you're egotistical. No. It tells you no. But God says yes because you were created to be amazing. And you are afraid to live your birthright. Step out of the shadow of your ego and step in to the power of what you were created to be before you were flesh on this planet. You were amazing before you were born. You were amazing when you were born. You're amazing now. And everything in your life is fodder for you to recognize that you are amazing. But see, what you did is you turned that mirror away. Turn it away. You look at the world and call it amazing, but refuse to look in the mirror. It's time to look in the mirror again and own up to your birthright of your amazingness. And I'll say it again. How sweet of you to see yourself in me.
You know, it's so funny you say that because I do feel that way sometimes because I don't want people to think I think I'm full of myself. I'm just being me, man, you know? I'm just being me. I was, like you said, I was born this way and that's the way I am. And like sometimes on Facebook, like when I tell people about who's going to be on the show, I like say to myself, are people, do they think I'm bragging? I'm not bragging. I'm doing this for you. I want you to be entertained and have fun. I do this for fun. I mean, I love it. I love what I'm doing and I love getting to speak with people like you. And you should be a spiritual counselor because what you just said literally gave me chills. What you just said to me, because you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. I'm holding back way too much.
No, I'm not right. I'm not right because I didn't create that awareness. That creation of awareness is God's awareness. It's the awareness of God within each and every single one of us. So I didn't create that because there is no such thing as good, bad, right, or wrong. Those are judgments, and that's a limited idea. So I'm trying to support you in recognizing and raising your vibration and your consciousness that you are beyond the idea of limitation when it comes to just allowing yourself to be your most authentic self instead of turning that mirror away and then looking at other people's judgments and saying, I choose my path based on their judgment. I live my life based on their judgment. I make decisions based on their judgment.
Mm-hmm.
And once you stop doing that, you will begin to stop saying, well, what they think is, I'm afraid they're going to think, or if I say that, after a while you say, no, if I'm living my most authentic life, I'm going to live my most authentic life. And I will recognize that no matter what anybody says and how I may take it. The other thing I'll recognize when they speak to me about that is that they're afraid to live their most authentic selves.
Yes.
And therefore, it's easy to point the finger at someone else and call them out without having to turn that finger the other way towards themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So let me make fun of you. Let me judge you because I'm not going within. But we're all mirrors. And people will subconsciously as well as consciously and spiritually turn that mirror away because they're frustrated with their own lives. And it's indicative that when they're frustrated with their own, their frustration really is about you.
Right. Right.
How come you're not frustrated like me? How come you think you're so beautiful and perfect? Because I am. And so once we begin to shine our own light, we then give permission to people to shine their own. Whether they do it or not is not a consequence. But you shining your own light on you allows your light so that they can be in the light to shine their own. You cannot give them your light, but you can shine it so that they're illuminated enough to recognize that their light shines equally. And if they don't, that's on them, and that's their journey. That's their journey. And so each time you come up against people, you begin to recognize, oh, they just don't know their light yet. They're just not aware of their light. They're just not aware of their light. And it's empowering to be able to know, I know what my light is. I know they're not ready for it. And that's okay.
Right.
But every time I come up against someone like that, it's not about me. It's about them not knowing their light.
You're right. You're absolutely right. Yeah. And by the way, folks, you're listening to the Deborah Wilson Show. I feel like I'm on your. I feel like I'm on your show. I feel like I'm on your
That's
show.
Hilarious.
This is amazing. Thank you. Thank you. You're absolutely right, Deb. You're absolutely right. I mean, it's so true. It's so true. And you know, you feel like you want to hold yourself back because you don't want to hurt anybody. And it's, I want to do what I'm
but
doing.
You can't
I want to
hurt
do
anybody.
For people.
Yeah, you can't hurt anybody because people choose their experience. People
right.
make choices in their experience. People may feel hurt by somebody, but the thing is, if your ego continues to say that you're hurting people, then people will allow themselves to blame you for it. You feel me?
Right.
I'm going to say
yeah.
it again. If
yeah.
your ego keeps going, well, you know what, I'm hurting people, then those people who take no responsibility of their own actions will go, oh, great, I got a scapegoat because they recognize that they hurt me, so I am going to put the blame there.
Right.
So they never go within. And if we're going within, if we're going within and growing within, then it's also our responsibility as well as our destiny to live our most authentic and loving and amazing selves so that they have an opportunity to eventually, maybe not through us, but maybe in the back of their head they hold on to it. So when they're in another experience, in another place, at another time, when something jars them, they'll remember the experience they had with you and go, I get it now. I get it now. Like
yeah.
that tarantula, I had a fear of them until it fell. And my first concern was, I need to care for it. Let me pick it up.
Right.
And if I did that, then I had to let go of the fear. You can't serve two masters.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you let
Damn.
Go of somebody else's judgment, you get a chance to embolden yourself and empower yourself, and eventually they get a chance to, whatever experience they're meant to have that click. And you'd be surprised how many people will remember that you've been an influence in their lives without even telling you. That
right.
you living your most authentic self gives them permission, even if they weren't ready for permission at that time. And when they are ready for permission, they'll always remember the people that gave them the permission first.
Wow.
Wow.
They may not remember your name, but they will remember the way you made them feel.
Right. You're absolutely right. You are absolutely right. My goodness.
Not, I'm not right. It's just cosmic. It's just cosmic truth as far as I'm concerned.
Right. It's the way it
as
is.
Far as I'm
right.
Concerned.
Right. No,
it's
you're absolutely. That's I agree
and I'm
with
just
you.
Experiencing
right.
it. And let me tell you something. Had it not been for all the dark times in my life, I wouldn't have evolved to where I am now.
I agree with that.
It was important for me to grow myself in order to better know myself. And that's something I realized doesn't belong to me. It belongs to everybody. So for me, I am completely a mirror. It's my responsibility to know what somebody's going through or at least feel it or step in their shoes. Why? Because it makes me more compassionate, more understanding, and more patient. Not always easy.
No.
Sometimes a challenge with people in the world. But you know what? I like a challenge.
Mm-hmm. Damn. Wow. 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 Yeah, you, everything you said is just so on the money. It's so on the money. Are you still into the paranormal and psychic? And I love that stuff. Are you into that?
Yeah. Not so much the psychic stuff, but definitely paranormal. Oh, I'm still into the paranormal. Very much so. And I've done shows on the paranormal. I'm very grateful to know people who are in the paranormal community that have had television shows and some who have passed on. But
Have you ever experienced anything yourself?
Oh, absolutely. A number of times. My mother called me on the phone after she transitioned. You know, that was an experience.
Wait. You got to share that. Tell me about that.
Once my mother transitioned, I was thinking about her because the one thing my mother always did is she made a bed whenever she left. She said, look, even if the room is dirty, a made-up bed makes the room look cleaner.
Mm-hmm.
So never leave without making up your bed. She never left to go to work or anything else or left the room without making up the bed.
Yeah.
And that's something I didn't adapt until after she passed. So I remember one day I was like, I don't know if it was a matter of I have to go somewhere or what the situation was, but I knew I was not leaving until my bed was made up.
Mm-hmm.
And so I said, okay, mommy, I made up the bed. I made up the bed. And at the time I had a landline.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a phone that would say, call from, and then it would give you the number. It wouldn't give you a name, but it was a landline that gave you the number.
Yeah.
And the number it gave was my number, meaning the landline number. But it's not possible for me to call myself.
Exactly.
You know, I how can I call myself? So it's not. And if I did try to call myself, I'd have to do it from another phone. Or if I picked up my phone and tried to call myself, I'd either get a busy signal or wouldn't go through.
Right.
So it was like, Now, I also set my ring to four rings because I'm in an apartment. It's small. So by the time I get to the phone, four rings is enough.
Yeah.
I'm not anywhere in this apartment where I can't get to the phone in four rings. So it rang for four times, and I kept looking at it, you know, call from, and it gave the number.
Mm.
And I didn't pick it up because I started thinking.
Mm.
And even when I didn't pick it up, when I thought it would stop, it kept ringing. It kept ringing until I picked up. It rang about seven, eight times.
Wow. It went over the four rings.
Yep. And when I picked it up, there was someone on the other line. And it wasn't like nothing. It wasn't because you usually if it's nothing and you hear nothing at all, you don't hear any static. You don't hear any. But it sounded atmospheric in the background.
Hmm.
It sounded atmospheric. So I knew that something or someone was on the line. And I slowly said hello.
Yeah.
And then I thought, this has got to be my mom. And I just said, Mommy.
Mm-hmm.
And then pause again. And then the phone clicked off.
Wow.
I heard the phone click. And I was like, that was my mom.
Oh, my God.
That was my
mom.
Chills. Because it's not possible for and it never happened since. But it wasn't, and I don't have a landline anymore, but even then when I did have it, it never happened since. So it's not possible for my landline to say, call from the same number that it is. It's not possible.
Yeah.
And it's not possible for that phone to ring eight times when the ringer was set to four.
Hmm. I got chills when you told me that. Oh, definitely.
Yeah, there
it sounds like it.
There are a number of phenomena that happen, not just with me, but with my father, not just with me, but my older brother. Not just with me, but my sister, my younger brother. They've all had experiences of my mother. They've all had experiences of my mother. My mother opened a door for me one time and for my father.
Huh. Wow. I had one. I had one. I don't know if I'd call it a paranormal. I was in the dishes, and all of a sudden, the front door blew open, and I said, "Billy, is that you?" My brother. I said, "Billy," and I got a chill ran through my body, and I said, the door blew open, and I just a chill ran through my body, and I said, "Billy, is that you?" And I said, "Oh God, there's nobody there." So I shut the door. 2 seconds later, the phone rings. This is the Newark police. We have your brother. We need you to come and identify him. I said, holy shit. I said, that to me was a thing. Because I said it was him coming to say he's dead. I don't know. It was so weird. That's the only experience wow. I ever had. I mean, I had some weird things about my mom, too. But they were more dreamy, you know, more along the dream line. So I don't know if those were paranormal experiences. But that was definitely one.
They are.
I think
they're also, yeah. They're also, why? Because people can come into your dreams, have conversations with you in your dreams. Absolutely. That happened with my cat. Cat came in my dreams, a full-on experience. And I was aware that I was dreaming because my consciousness went, this is a dream. But yet my cat was there. I can feel her. I can touch her. She was three-dimensional. I could feel her warmth, and she had just transitioned. So I believe that your mother had the opportunity to contact you through dreams. Absolutely. Why? Because you're in your relaxed, heightened state of relaxation and sleep, where you're open and vulnerable to receive. And I personally would like to believe, and I would like to have faith that that was your brother. Absolutely.
I think
and
it
not
was.
Only that, but paranormally, when there are entities that enter a space, the temperature will drop.
Yeah, because it was like a cold draft went over my body, and then like my whole body, like I literally got a chill throughout my whole body, and I'm feeling it right now, and just thinking about it, because it was very,
wow.
And it was by myself, so I was scared, you know, and I'm like, what the hell? So I shut the door, I come back to do the dishes, the phone rings. I didn't even like get to the sink. I was right by the phone, and it rang, and I was like, oh my God, yeah, that was an experience. I had one other time with my
wow.
mom. She had just passed, and it's so funny. In every dream that I do have of her, she doesn't know who I am, and I wake up crying. But I haven't dreamt about her in a long time, and I wish I would, but I haven't. The one dream that haunted me terribly, it was only a couple of days after she passed, and the dream was she was in the ground reaching up for me. She wasn't in a coffin or anything. She was standing up in her grave saying, don't let them take me. Don't let them take me. Oh my God. When I tell you that was a nightmare. That broke my heart. All the dreams
wow.
break my heart. All the dreams break my heart. That's why I want them, but I'm glad I don't have them because they break my heart, you know, because she doesn't know who I am. What, hon?
And it kind of stopped? It kind of went away?
Yeah, yeah. They haven't happened lately. No, I can't even tell you the last time I had a dream about her. It's been a long time. Yeah, I think she was still here.
Maybe she's accepting her transition.
Yeah, I think at the time she was still here with me, you know? So,
yeah,
but
maybe she is accepting her transition.
Yeah, it's just crazy. It's just crazy. But, yeah, I'm a big psychic person. I love to be read. I want to know what's going to happen. I don't know why I'm so fascinated with having to need to know what's going to happen with me. But there's a lot of us like that. But, you know, I don't know.
I was like that, and I stopped a long time ago.
I enjoy
completely,
it.
Like, done.
I know, because sometimes
yeah,
I don't know if it's real or not, you know? I try to think it's real, and things that are said, they're like, oh, my God, how would you know that, you know? But who knows? But you have been in just about everything. I mean, you've done American Dad. You've done what's the other one, that popular one? I haven't seen it. The other animated one. Family Guy, thank you. That one. And,
yeah,
and,
oh,
God,
those were
and,
old.
Yeah, and not even to mention all the movies you've been in. I got to ask you, what are you doing with my buddy, Terry Ray?
I did an online series with Lonnie Anderson, Terry Ray and Lonnie Anderson, called Meister is So Gay.
Mm.
And it was phenomenally funny. And Lonnie Anderson... formerly from WKRP in Cincinnati, Cincinnati, and formerly married to the late and great Burt Reynolds.
Yeah.
She was phenomenally funny and perfect and still looks as beautiful as she did when she was on WKRP in Cincinnati. Mm. And it was an online series. It was an online series, and it was a comedy called My Sister is So Gay. Find it. It is funny. Terry Ray is absolutely amazing. And Ray Dawn Chong and I played lovers.
Oh, you're kidding me. I was going to ask you what your role was. So, okay, you just answered
that.
Yeah,
I was his lesbian partner in business. And his sister seemingly has a crush on me, even though she's in the process of getting divorced. And he realizes, oh, my sister is so gay. She just won't admit it.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's the whole series is about their relationship between brother and sister. And it's
now,
really funny. Lonnie Anderson is brilliant.
I forgot to ask him when he was on. Does he plan on doing that into an actual show instead of an online series or after COVID or after?
Well, you know what?
No
the
idea.
The thing is, he moved from Los Angeles to Palm Springs.
Mm.
And as he continues to have different creative endeavors, I don't know where that would go. But I know it did well. I know it did well. And I think you can find it on Amazon.
Yeah.
I don't know if you can find it on YouTube or Amazon, but if you look up My Sister is So Gay, you can see where you can see episodes. You can find out. Where you can find episodes because we did two seasons and it was funny.
Yeah, he's good.
I loved working on it.
Yeah, he's really funny.
Yeah. So I don't know where that would go, but it was great for the time that we had the opportunity to play it. And I'm very grateful to Terry for bringing me onto the project. And I'm grateful to Lonnie Anderson for saying yes and seeing the potential. It was brilliant. It was really brilliant.
Yeah, because that doesn't seem like something she would play in a type of role
she
would play.
Oh, she played an alcoholic who wasn't an alcoholic. She was brilliant. Alcoholic who wasn't an alcoholic. You have to see it. It's just brilliant.
I can't wait. So what can we expect from Deborah Wilson? What's coming up for you? What are you working on? What's going on?
I have been working nonstop on video game projects, on motion capture and performance projects, on animated series, on movies, looping in ADR. And some of the things that I've done in the past are, if you liked the Conjuring series of films, there was a spinoff called The Nun, and I did all the demonic voices in that.
Really?
Along with an amazing actor named Dee Bradley Baker, who does a phenomenal voiceover artist named Dee Bradley Baker. Between his voice and my voice, they made the voice for Valak every time she possessed someone. Do you remember the song? And it became a huge, phenomenal preschool hit song internationally. Baby Shark, Baby Shark.
Yep.
Well, they turned it into a Nickelodeon series, and I'm Grandma Shark on the show.
No
kidding.
So if you
go to Nickelodeon or Nick Jr., I'm Grandma Shark on the show. Go and find it.
Oh, cool. My kids are grown now. My kids are grown now. We don't watch I watch Nick at Night now, but I don't watch any of those shows. But, of course, everybody knows Baby Shark. So, yeah. Oh, I got to check it out.
It's called Baby Shark's Big Show.
Cool.
On Nickelodeon.
Cool.
And that just started. And I've got three different series on Netflix. The first one that I started was called All Hail King Julian, which is a spinoff of Madagascar from DreamWorks. And I play about five different characters in that. And there are like 78 different episodes. And on the Cartoon Network, which you can also find on HBO Max, is another series called Mau Mau and the Heroes of Pure Heart. And you can find that as well. And I'm also the voice of the game show announcer when NBC did the reboot of The Weakest Link, hosted by Jane Lynch. I was the game show announcer, and I think you can find repeats on NBC if you wanted to see the show. But when The Weakest Link got rebooted into a game show on NBC, Jane Lynch hosted, and I was the voice of the game show announcer on the show.
You're doing a lot of voice stuff. Oh, you must be loving that.
And video games as well. I do a lot of video games. I'm the first black female Jedi in video game history. So I'm very proud of that. And the game that I did was called A Jedi Fallen Order, Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order. And I'm also in the game. So that's really wonderful to do performance capture and have it not just be the voice.
Right.
So, and there are a couple of games in which they've rendered my avatar in the game, and I've done the performance capture for it, meaning the suit with the little reflective balls and the head cam, meaning the head camera. So I do, and that's called performance capture. So I do performance capture as well, but yeah, I do a lot of voiceover, a lot, and differently too, because I also do NBC promos. I do promotional stuff for NBC for about their shows. So whenever you're looking at a preview of a show that's about to come on, a lot of times you might hear me.
Well, I'm going to be paying attention now. Every time I hear a promo for NBC now, I'm going to pay attention because your voice, you can do, you know, from watching you on Mad TV, you have so many different characters that you can throw together. And that's been years ago. I can only imagine the amount of characters you do now.
Yeah. And so if you, well, all of that is a plethora of characters based on the video games that I voice. I was working in a session today and I got a chance to play a dragon as well. So it's really lovely that at this age, instead of losing momentum, like you might or consider in front of camera where it's like, well, you're getting older and you look like this and it doesn't match well with that or that person or this series, you know, instead of any of that, it's nice to be able to have the momentum build as I get older without the need of my appearance or the judgment of my appearance and my age and my race.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of can we close our eyes and believe you as this being, this creature, this character? And the answer so far on many levels has been yes. So
absolutely.
I'm very grateful that I'm actually gaining momentum as I get older instead of losing it.
Yeah, it sounds like it. Like you're extremely busy, which is great. That's phenomenal.
I really
and
am. I'm very grateful. I'm grateful. Grateful.
Absolutely. Well, that's how we started the show, you saying you were grateful. And I am too as well. And I can't even say I'm even more so that I've got to speak to you and got to know you. And I'm just grateful for that. And I thank you so much for joining me. And what a pleasure, Deborah. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you, Joanne.
No, thank you. Here we go. We're going to go back to that. Thank you.
No, thank you. Well, thank you for thanking my thank you, and I thank you.
Yes, no, thank you. No, thank you.
No, thank you.
Oh, my God. What an honor. Thank you so much, Deborah. Everybody, Deborah Wilson, check it out. Go look at
IMDb. You can look at IMDb, definitely Baby Shark on Nickelodeon. Baby Shark, the big show on Nickelodeon.
Yes, and also she does the voiceovers in My Son Plays It. The big one. Thank you. He plays that
Call
one. And it's so funny because he says, well, who do you have on tonight? And I said, oh, she's an actress and comedian. You probably don't know her. You know, my son's 21 and, you know, they don't care about crap from the past. So I said, well, she did voiceovers on Call of Duty. And then I told him the characters that you were in World of Warcraft and also Wolfenstein. And he's like, oh, wow.
Right on.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. So thank you so much again, Deborah. I wish you nothing but the best and can't thank you enough for touching me tonight, even though we didn't touch each other, but you did touch me tonight. Thank you.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you for having me on, Joanne. Thank you.
All right. Take care. Thank you so much, everybody. Deborah Wilson, check her out on, especially with the people I know, your grandchildren. Watch the Baby Sharks big show on Nickelodeon and that Deborah's Grandma Shark. So love it. Love it. Love it. Deborah, thank you so much, everybody. Deborah Wilson. Take care,
thank
Deborah.
You, thank
it.
You.
Thank
you.
Bye-bye.
So much.
Thank
you. Take care. And thank
bye.
You, Joanne.
Take care.
Bye.
God bless.
You
Oh, boy, I got to say, oh, man, what a thrill. I can't tell you, talking to these folks. And I'm a huge fan. And
And if you've never seen her on Mad TV, I mean, her characters are just phenomenal. I really did want her to do a little Beneatha for us, but it's, oh, God. Beneatha Latifah Halifa Sharifa Jackson. That's it. I'm definitely not doing it the way she does it, but, oh, and the Melina and Lita, that sketch is, oh, God, so funny, so funny. But, man, what an inspiration to speak with her, too. I mean, I literally had chills speaking to her a few times with things we were discussing. Wow. And she's right about a lot of stuff. Be yourself, folks. Be yourself. We had a great show last week. Was it last week that we had Jimmy on? Jimmy Peterick? And some great music we played for him. And I can't wait to do the monthly music mashup so that we can play his other songs. And I need a pick-me-up, so I think we're going to close with the Vehicle, which is Ides of March with Jimmy Peterick. And coming up, my calendar is not updated yet. I apologize. I was waiting for some people to confirm. I think we got all our confirmations today. I'll be shooting replies back and emails later if anybody's waiting for their email. The 11th Sunday, we have Rasheem Morris, right? Oh, God. I apologize. I don't have it in front of me. Dee Wallace on the 14th. The 16th we have, I have to look at my email. Everything just came through today with the confirmations for people we were missing. Joyce Bulafont is going to be joining us too. Who else? Oh, on the 21st, we're going to be doing a comedy night to help raise money for Vinnie Mark. He's going through a tough time right now, and he's also a comedian. So thank you again for listening, everybody. Thank you to Deborah. Just an amazing, amazing evening for me, and I hope for you as well. And I'm sorry, I'm looking for my sponsor list. There it is. And I'll just say thank you to our sponsors, the High Bar and Bistro in Garfield, New Jersey, KWB Wines in South Africa, Tees for the Times and Other Stuff in Clifton, New Jersey, FinTech Productions in Oka Harbor, New Jersey, Take a Break from Cancer.org for Pete's Sake, Cloison Designs in New Jersey, Think Big Picture LLC in New York, The Observer Newspaper in Kearney, New Jersey, Joey Max Cafe in Harrison, New Jersey, GenieBottles.com, and H2 One Hand Sanitizer. All right, folks, we shall see you on Sunday at 7 p.m. I think it's 8 p.m. I think I changed it to 8 p.m., but I have to look. So I'm going to close out with one of my favorite songs, Vehicle by the Ides of March with Jimmy Peterick. Take care, everybody. Bye-bye. Thank you, Deborah Wilson. Take care.
Hey, well, I'm the friendly stranger in the black sedan. Won't you hop inside my car? Got pictures, got candy, I'm a lustful man. Take it to the nearest star. I'm your vehicle, baby. I'll take you anywhere you wanna go. I'm
you hop inside my car? I got pictures, candy, I'm a lovable man. Take it to the nearest star. I'm your vehicle, babe. Take it anywhere you wanna go. I'm your vehicle, woman. And you know I love you. Ooh, and I'm your vehicle, baby. All right. Oh, don't you know I love you?
Love
I
you.
Need you. I want you. Got to have your sky. Great God in heaven, you know I love you. Ooh, you know I love you. Great God in heaven, you know I love you.